Hi, this is Eve Miles, and you're listening to the Infamous Podcast.
Hey, welcome back. This is episode 10 of the Infamous Podcast.
Can't even pronounce the name.
I can't. You figure, you know, after 10 episodes, I'd know how to pronounce
What's up, y'all miss us? You missed the Infamous Podcast. Admit it. You're just starting to catch on. We're starting to occupy a place in your hearts, aren't we?
At least their ears, if
you
anything.
You love us. You can't get enough.
What's going on, people? What's going on, Brian Williams?
Man, ain't nothing going on, man. I'm ready to talk comics. I'm ready to talk current events. We had a lengthy interview with my compatriot, Christian Colbert, tonight.
It'll
be out there for you guys. So,
which the first half will be at the end of this episode, and then we're going to release the second half on Tuesday. So you get extra Infamous Podcast 2 weeks in a row.
Yep.
Hey, so real quick, we had our Cincinnati Comic Expo this weekend, the big comic show, which holds a special place for us because we met at the very first one 6 years ago.
Yes.
So you haven't been...
Yeah, I didn't make it to this one. I work Saturdays, so it's hard to turn down.
And then you decided to go to the Bengals game on Sunday, which is fair. Yeah.
Hard to turn down money when it's available to you, and I have free tickets to go to the Bengals game. So
don't.
And the Bengals won, home opener.
What?
San Diego.
When we drove down to the expo, we saw we were like right next to the San Diego team bus, and my brother-in-law was like, "I wonder what they'd do if you just like pulled over, like act like you were gonna pull over real quick and run them off the road." And I was like, "I'm not gonna do that." But
no,
thanks.
No, what kind of person thinks of those things?
Bengals fans.
Anyway.
So the expo, over 20,000 people this year.
Yep.
That's a 4,000 person increase over last year. And the year you and I met, there were only 1,600.
Yep.
So in 6 years, it's turned into a really big show. I feel it's pretty important to Cincinnati and the comic community. Anyway, so you can check
out... That's cool. My only thing with that is sometimes bigger doesn't mean better. Sometimes bigger means more commercial. I liked kind of the smaller feel of some of those smaller shows. But, you know, takes two to tango. Sometimes big shows are great, and sometimes the smaller shows are fun. You know, it just depends.
I think what's great about it is just seeing all the people, especially, like, the dads and moms and their little kids there and introducing them to the culture, where we really haven't had a lot of that in this area over the last few years. Like, we have our Horror Hounds, and there's, like, Mid-Ohio, which is Wizard World now. But, like, in Cincinnati, it's cool to have that.
Yeah.
Which I actually have a fun story I wanted to share with you. I teased it on the bonus episode earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
You guys saw on our Facebook page, I had my picture taken with Eve Miles, who played Gwen Cooper on Torchwood, the Doctor Who spinoff. The fun thing there is I've never paid for a celebrity picture before, but the crush and just like loveliness of her kind of forced my hand.
She's very evident in the photographs taken.
Yes.
You're about to fucking
jump out of my skin.
Out-of-body experience.
So, okay. So you guys remember Johnny. He's been on the show. He filled in for Brian a couple weeks ago when, you know, like he said, work, making money got in the way, which... It's totally understandable. Anyway, Johnny is a huge, like, autograph hound seeker. He got, I think, 4 autographs, which was a pretty hefty chunk of change. But, like, all day I was
What do you do with autographs?
He puts them in a book. Like, it's really cool. Like, you know, like, it's cool to just kind of go through and see, like, all the, like, celebrity people he's met and, like, had conversations with. Like, for him, it's, like, the memory and like, getting to meet the people. But, like, I'm with you. Like, I don't need to pay for somebody's signature.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean,
anyway.
Like that Robin, like that Nightwing.
I
that's
paid
cool.
for that. Yeah, that's I got
that's
a commission
cool,
by Christopher Jones.
And then you got the signature, but
yeah.
Like somebody's signature, like didn't you
just
tell
on
me
a picture.
Didn't you tell me Adam West was charging
like $60 or something
the
like that?
The fuck
like,
out of here.
Burt Ward was charging Burt Ward was charging $60 and Adam West was charging more. I wanted to know how much Burt Ward would charge for me to punch him in the face.
The fuck out of here.
Anyway, so Johnny and I walked around the expo all day Saturday, and I was just joking around, like, I wonder how much, you know, Eve Miles would charge for me to lick her on the cheek. You know, just being me, kind of being an ass to Johnny, making fun of him. So we go up, we talk to her, there wasn't anybody around. So you
contemplated licking Eve Miles on the cheek.
Oh, yeah, I totally did. Right. So we're sitting there, and we're talking to her, and, like, so I finally decided to get a picture, right? And Johnny has told me stories about, like, some of the female celebrities, like, you just don't touch them, you know? Like, you kind of have to act like your arms around them. So when she came up, and she got, like, real close, like, her body was, like, all the way against my body, which was pretty awesome. I felt the curve.
You felt her body temperature.
I did. And so I said, oh, is this okay? You know, being the noob that I am. And she goes, well, it's not like I'm going to do this. And she, like, acted like she was going to lick my face. And so, like, I had to tell her the story, and you, she thought it was hilarious. And
you almost had an embarrassing moment.
Yeah.
Because you almost lost control of your body, your bodily fluids.
Anyway, so it was fun. Anybody that
can look at the picture of Brian standing next to this actress will understand it. He was keeping himself in control.
Smitten. And then all we can have to deal with, though, well, she looks like your wife. It's like, no, she doesn't look like my wife.
No comment.
Well, anyway, so then the other thing was, because Eve and I had such a good rapport, I got her to do a cool little bumper for us that will air at the beginning of our podcast here for the near future.
So is that going to be a regular thing?
I'm going to try and get other people, you know, so I think that'll be fun.
Do you think we could get Sam Jackson? I would really like that.
That would be really cool. Cause, like,
it's my podcast. I'm tired of these damn snakes on a plane.
What's the TV edit for that? Get these Monday to Friday snakes off my Monday to Friday plane. I would love to get him to do that.
It's my beer. You ever watch Dave Chappelle?
Yeah.
Sam Jackson beer.
Yep. So getting Charlie Murphy to do... I'm the infamous podcast, bitch. That would be awesome. All right. Shit. So, yeah, that was it. It was fun, funny, and just kind of ironic that happened.
And that's cool. And maybe, you know, from now on, like, fuck, we should probably get back on the phone with Christian and get... Christian has a great voice.
He does.
We should have him do... This is Christian Colbert, and this is the Infamous Podcast. Yeah. I mean, that's what we should do.
We should.
Okay, we'll get him back on the phone.
I just kind of quit goat thinking for a minute there and walked over, and she was like, oh, hello, Brian. And, you know.
Goat thinking.
Do you remember the old Adam Sandler CD with the goat who was tied to the old man's truck, and, like, the frat boys used to, like, go and, like, give him beer and stuff? It was the stand-up thing. I don't know. It's from the 90s.
Yeah, I don't know.
When he was funny.
Yeah, I never saw that.
Anyway, so I quit goat thinking. All right, so the majority of this episode is going to be the Christian interview because it's too good for us to really not focus on. But there was some big news this week in comics, especially from the all-new, all-different.
All-new, all-different. Marvel has finally revealed what they revealed about maybe a month ago. They were doing a Black Panther standalone book, which... fucking makes sense because they're going to have a Black Panther big budget movie in 2017. So I'm glad to see Black Panther gets his own showcase.
In far in advance of the movie.
Yes.
You know, so it's not like, oh, well, the movie comes out on whatever, is it May 2017 or is it an August release? I don't remember.
At this point, it doesn't make a fucking difference because it's 2017. But
they're not waiting until, you know, two months before. Yeah, like, but exactly. Yeah, they're going to build a story and, like, you know, T'Challa's going to get... Is that how you pronounce it? I always pronounce it that way.
T'Challa, too.
Yeah. So, you know...
we don't know how to pronounce anything.
Jeez. He's going to get a good run and you know, get some get some story runway going on there.
Right, right.
But so, you are excited.
I'm very...
Rightfully so.
I'm very excited because...
And I was excited to see your excitement.
The writer... that has been assigned to this task is a guy named Ta-Nehisi Coates. I hope that's how you pronounce it.
Well, that's how we looked up the
we saw him his interview. Kimmel,
no, it was Stephen Colbert.
Stephen Colbert.
So
Ta-Nehisi. So Ta-Nehisi, Mr. Coates, if you're listening to us, forgive us if we've mispronounced your name, man. We are in your camp. I am completely behind you. So much so that I went and bought your book today.
Between the World and Me.
Between the World and Me. It's a New York Times bestseller. It's a letter that Mr. Coates wrote to his 15-year-old son in the form of a book. And it's about his experiences as a black man and his expectations for his black son in this country.
And he grew up in Baltimore? Or
I don't know. I haven't even... I just brought the book to the podcast to show you that I am dedicated to this writer. I want to know about him. I want to get a nice jump ahead of the Black Panther run.
Get a feel for who he is and his style. Yeah, and you know, I was just reading the jacket cover when you got here, and you know, I definitely want to check this out to support your excitement, but also to learn about him as well.
Right.
He's
also
he writes for the Atlantic.
Well-known writer for the Atlantic Monthly online. He's won a lot of awards, writing awards and so forth. So, I mean, this guy's no slouch. So, actually, I heard about this writer from my 19-year-old son, Quincy, who's attending OU, who also is in considering journalism as a career. And, I mean, he reads his whatever his column is or his monthly writings. And told me that this guy was extremely talented and that he would be a good fit for the Black Panther.
Quincy's a seer.
I hope so. I have great hopes for it because the last time the Black Panther was really intelligently written was by, I already told you guys, this guy named Christopher Priest. And this guy seems like he can step in and do the same thing. So I'm looking forward to it. And Brian Stelfreeze is the artist, and I'm looking at a Batman picture,
and it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's got this moody, atmospheric, hunched over, muscular, panther-like Batman pose, and if this is any indication of what we're going to see artistically, this book is going to be not only well-written, but well-illustrated.
Yeah, I like his... He's got some pretty cool, like, James Bond with young Sean Connery look really cool. You know, we're just looking at his image results page. He's got a really cool Superman. So, real quick, the Christopher Priest run, would you say that was the last time the character was relevant? Like, from a comic world perspective, as a standalone character? Because I know he's been a big part of, you know, some of these world-changing, like, crossovers and things like that. But, like, we really haven't heard a lot from Black Panther as a solo character over the last couple years.
I would say the definitive runs of Black Panther, obviously, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby first introducing him. Those first appearances are extremely definitive. If you've never seen Black Panther's initial appearance in the Marvel Universe, you know, it's in an issue of the Fantastic Four called The Way It Began. Just it's simply ingenious. Okay, then the next critical run was in a Marvel series called Jungle Action, and I believe Don McGregor was the writer of those issues. And it really fleshed out T'Challa and Wakanda and introduced the Rogues Gallery.
Cool.
But the most prominently, well, the best series or the best run, the longest run on Black Panther ever has been the Christopher Priest run, which was in the 90s in the Marvel under the Marvel Knights banner. And it was hot to death.
So real quick, just for people who don't know, give a quick overview of the Marvel Knights banner, because it was outside of the comic book code.
Marvel Knights banner, once Image came and, like, shook the whole comic book world up in 91, 92, mm-hmm. 93. Some of those creators, those creators that were corporate guys became indie guys, mm-hmm. got tired of the indie world, came back to dip their foot back into the corporate world, right. since now they had a little bit more clout. Because they went off and did this rogue shit. So they came back and they handpicked characters they wanted to fuck with. Like Joe Quesada wanted to try his hand at Daredevil.
Right.
With Kevin Smith.
Mm-hmm.
So they took Kevin Smith and did the Daredevil run mm-hmm. under the Marvel Knights banner. Well, they did the same thing with Black Panther and Christopher Priest. And at the time... Christopher Priest and what's the artist that used to be on Ghost Rider? Mark Teixeira. And okay. Mark Teixeira does a slap your mama, throw your mama down the stairs, Black Panther. I mean, his Black Panther will slap you through the book. His fist would come through the book and punch you in your mouth. Okay? That's how hard hitting his Black Panther was.
Oh, wow.
So you had the good writing, the good art together. And it's just a hell of a run. It shows the Black Panther is a king. Okay? He's a king. He can buy your ass. He knows martial arts and all types of African martial arts and will whoop your ass. Okay? And he's also a scientist and will design some contraptions and some machines that will fuck you up too. And so he's this formidable force within the Marvel Universe that's hardly ever used or explored. But in this particular series, we see all these things, and we see the technology of Wakanda, and we see the political strategies. Sometimes this book would come off as a Quentin Tarantino movie, and sometimes it would come off as a Tom Clancy novel. It was that sophisticated, and it ran for 50...
I thought you said 60-something
issues in the mid-90s. It was a must-read every week. Wolverine, Iron Man guest starred, Fantastic Four guest starred, Mephisto was a villain in one of the runs. So it was a great run, and it's gonna be very interesting to see what Ta-Nehisi Coates does with this,
mm-hmm.
because I think what we're missing with Black Panther, even in the Christopher Priest run, is a comic book that is easily something that's accessible. I think the Christopher Priest run was great because I'm a Black Panther fan and I was able to get into it, but I don't think it was very accessible because you had to have some type of smarts to read it and figure it out. I mean,
it wasn't really a jumping on point for the character.
Right.
So...
Whereas a Spider-Man book, you can pick up almost any Spider-Man book and jump in and not necessarily know where the story is going.
Mm-hmm.
But Spider-Man is a simple enough, basic, bare-bones character that you can jump in and quickly...
Yeah, it's all about redemption.
Yeah,
you know,
but so. Black Panther is on some different shit.
Completely different sometimes, motivation.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and sometimes people don't plug into that immediately.
Did you ever watch the Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes cartoon from a couple years ago?
Yes.
It's on Netflix if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
When the way they introduced Black Panther mm-hmm. in that series was so freaking cool because it was like over a series of maybe like six mm-hmm. episodes where like he was popping up, he was breaking into Avengers Mansion. Like you're like, okay, like where are they going with this character? And it was like he was testing out the Avengers to see if they were worthy of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, when you talk about he's a king, like, it was so exemplified that, like, okay, these people have to be worthy to help me. And I don't know. I thought that was really cool. I loved the design of the character there. I loved when they went to Wakanda and just kind of everything that encompassed that. Like, that whole cartoon was awesome. I think it's highly underrated.
Well, and if you ever read the original Avengers with Roy Thomas mm-hmm. and John Buscema, that's what Black Panther did.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the Black Panther is really a spinoff character of the Fantastic Four.
Right.
Because the Fantastic Four were the first people to ever visit Wakanda outside of Captain America. Because Captain America visited in World War II.
Right.
And might I add, got his ass whooped by the Black Panther when he tried to enter into the kingdom. But the thing that I like about Black Panther is he kind of has a, not just because of the way he looks, but he kind of has a Batman vibe. You know how Batman has a dossier on every JLA member?
Yeah.
That's kind of what Black Panther did in the Avengers episode. Yeah. And he was checking everybody out and weighing and balancing their powers and this, that, and the other. But the thing that I thought was think is really cool about Black Panther is he's a politician.
Mm-hmm.
He's a secret agent. He's
he's a superhero.
He's all of these cool things wrapped into one. There's a lot of intrigue tied into his personality and his character. And let's not forget that one of the major resources in the Marvel Universe is vibranium.
Right.
And he owns
a mountain of it, basically, chunk of, right? Yeah.
I was engaged by one of my colleagues and artist friends to write a Black Panther story. And I really don't play around writing too much fan fiction or shit like that, because I don't see wasting my time on writing other characters.
Right.
But something that always occurred to me that should be a natural story to tell with Black Panther is, if you're sitting on a chunk of vibranium, obviously the U.S. is going to have an interest in it. Yeah. Somebody's going to have an interest in it. The world, right? And
how do you protect that?
Well, the thing was, I wrote a story. I wrote a proposal of a story where it was called Grand Theft Wakanda. And it was basically S.H.I.E.L.D. shows up, Nick Fury shows up, and it's like, hey, T'Challa, you know, it's all good. We know this is your country and everything. We're not going to upset your country, but we need this vibranium. And they just come in and they yank it. So Black Panther basically has to go to war against S.H.I.E.L.D. And the name of the series, the name of the arc was going to be called The Man from Wakanda.
Oh, cool.
And it's basically Black Panther was going to steal some codes or whatever so nobody could access his vibranium, but he's on the run around the world using his different resources to stay on the run, to keep away from people. And it would show politician, spy, adventurer, superhero, blah, blah, yeah. blah.
Just all the facets of his character.
Right. And I think that's what you have to do. You can't do them all at once.
He's not one-dimensional.
Right.
He's not even two-dimensional. He's multi-dimensional. And yeah, like you're saying, you can't do it all at once.
Yeah. You have to clearly develop each phase of his character at a given point in the story so people can absorb that, because he's deeper than a lot of characters. Mm-hmm. You know, so
well, I mean the whole, like, he's a superhero,
not to mention the cultural significance.
Well, it's in Wakanda's in Africa. Is it the southern part of Africa? Like it's always hazy, yeah,
you know.
But like, so it's in Africa, he's, you know, a Black superhero, so there's that significance.
But
to
he's
it.
African.
He's and
which is a clear distinction from African American.
Which is why I said Black.
Yeah.
And then he's a king, so he has these people to look out for, and then they have the vibranium. They're the world's, like, leader in vibranium, so he has this resource to protect.
And
to keep
Wakanda,
and their technology is, like, off the charts.
Well, there's a jungle that surrounds Wakanda, and it's a living techno jungle,
right?
And that can be interpreted in many different ways. Jack Kirby had it as like a metal, like, mm-hmm. living jungle, which of course he, once again, he's on that Kirby feel
kick.
Good,
yeah,
that Kirby feel good stuff. That's a shout out to you,
Brandon Montclair. Which Brandon, you have to come on the show.
Devil Dinosaur, Moon Girls, we will read it.
We want to read it. We want to talk about it.
We're gonna read it. We're gonna chop it up. We're gonna discuss it with you.
Yeah, you and Amy.
Yeah,
we want both of you on the show. But yeah, no. You know, so like thinking of like Wakanda and like their techno jungle, right?
Yeah,
like that's how Marvel does it.
Yeah,
and then like the DC version is Gorilla City. And the sigh is the right thing.
Did he mention Gorilla City at the same time we're talking about Wakanda?
But I'm just saying, like, that's why DC is... Oh. Hey, how many DC books do you get?
Let's see, I get Batman.
You get Batman every month?
Yeah.
Okay.
I get Scott Snyder's Batman. I get Robin.
The We Are Robin.
We Are Robin. And I've been collecting Grayson.
And we talked about, well, never mind. Well, so get back to Black Panther, because, like,
why'd you bring that up?
I don't know.
He brought up Gorilla City.
Just brought up DC.
Gorilla City is an environment in the Flash comics. And I kind of see why you brought it up.
It's a city in Africa, jungle. It's hidden. There's technology.
I didn't know Grodd was in Africa, per se.
But
is he?
Yeah.
Or is it some other...
No, I mean, like...
multi-dimensional...
Well, like, in, like, the Flash TV series, Grodd was, like, an animal that was tested on. But, like, in the comics and stuff, I mean, Gorilla City's in Africa. It's got, like, an invisibility cloaking shield.
I thought it was in another dimension. Yeah. But no. I haven't read Grodd done properly in a while.
It's been a long time.
But anyway, Wakanda is a much...
Yeah.
It's
richer story. Advanced. And much more to it.
Well, and it was written by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, so what... You know,
do you remember what year Black Panther was introduced?
I want to say 63. No, not 63. 67.
66.
Okay.
So split the difference.
Yeah.
Kind of. And so if you don't know, the Black Panther character has... it's a lineage, right? It's passed down.
Yes.
Which I think makes it even deeper, because then you have the whole family living up to expectations.
Sometimes, but I think that's cool. Sometimes I...
If it's written right.
Yeah, I mean, once again, you know, it's like the Phantom. You know, the Phantom...
yeah.
There's always one... person that you really want to focus on in that particular lineage, and T'Challa is the one that we focus on. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think it's interesting that there's some tribal connections to his title. What I find most fascinating about Wakanda is the inner politics within that kingdom. Mm-hmm. and it really hasn't been explored to the point Asgard has been explored,
right,
or other places. I mean, the techno jungle
can
do so many different things with that.
Yeah. Did you read AVX, the Avengers versus X-Men story from a couple years ago?
No.
So it was right on the tail of Storm and Black Panther being married.
Yeah, I read
because they were a couple, and she was the queen of Wakanda.
I thought that was done out of convenience.
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird.
Hey, we've got two Africans.
Let's put them together.
Yeah, you know.
So, anyway, during that...
I don't even see that organically happening.
Yeah, I didn't catch, like, when it happened. I saw the end of it. So, like, during that, like, series, the X-Men attacked Wakanda and flooded it and killed a bunch of people and, like, you know... so that was kind of the end, where, like, the X-Men were no longer welcome there, and Storm was no longer welcome there, and it was just this really, like, weird dynamic that, like,
developed from, like, a weirdo thing.
No, I don't think they took the vibranium, if I remember
correctly. It was at some point.
But they were, like, after it.
Took all the vibranium, and I'm like, okay, and then Black Panther turned into a female, and it's just like, this is why I'm happy with Ta-Nehisi Coates, because... I know this brother did not agree to do the job if they were going to impose some type of mandates on him to do silly shit with the character.
Yeah,
that's why I'm happy. If you recall, I've been somewhat critical.
I mean, you just talked about this two or three weeks ago.
Yeah,
and you know, like, I mean, I got the email from Marvel 10 minutes before you messaged me about it, and you know,
well, I've been critical about a recent black writer, David Walker, who's writing Cyborg. David Walker is a fantastic writer. I mean, I've told you that. I think a lot of his work, I've been reading his shit since 2009. He did some self-publishing on some some he wrote a book about blaxploitation that was brilliant, that I love, and it's a very enjoyable read. But I haven't loved Cyborg. I just haven't. I'm not gonna lie and say I have, because I just don't connect with the character. And I feel like David is being held to, I think his
it's an editorial problem.
Yeah, I feel like he's been editorialized, and I can't prove it. I surely don't want him to say it, because I don't want him to jeopardize his job. But it's a shame that they won't let him turn loose and turn up on Cyborg, because Cyborg is it, as it's being written right now, to me it's dull, and it just doesn't have the bite, the bark, the fury, the power that character can have.
Yeah.
And I hope Ta-Nehisi has such a high profile that they have to have some big ideas in store for us, and some big action.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a character that deserves this, just like Daredevil deserved it years ago when Kevin Smith injected that love into
it. I love that run.
I did too.
And the whole,
it was only 8 issues.
The whole idea that it was Mysterio behind everything, and that like Kingpin was in such a dire strait financially that like you could buy Daredevil's identity for $1 million.
Yeah.
Like it's like,
and it was love. It was,
it's like
it
good. Was, like it, thank it, you, Kevin.
It
you
was
know?
A, it was a love letter
mm-hmm.
to Daredevil, yeah. And I tell you, he did it again on Green Arrow.
Yeah.
He brought Green Arrow out of purgatory.
Yeah, and the way he, the story, the way the story went, where
literally.
It came back. Yeah, yeah, I mean, like yeah. he was brought back because Hal, when he was Parallax, the very last thing he did before he reignited the sun was grabbed a speck of DNA off of Superman's cape,
mm-hmm.
and like you know, that's how we got the husk of Green Lantern. Or Green Arrow. And then his soul was still off in heaven. And it was like...
And Hal Jordan was the Spectre.
Yeah, and he was the Spectre yeah. at the time. And it was such a cool... And Phil Hester's art...
Oh, Phil Hester's art. And Andy Parks...
Perfect.
Was Andy Parks the inker? Or the colorist?
One of the two, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just a brilliant comic book experience. But the reason I bring this up with relation to Black Panther mm-hmm. is Kevin Smith had a love for the character Daredevil.
Yeah.
A love. Just like if somebody asked me right now to write Luke Cage or Black Panther, I love these characters. Uh-huh. I would dig deep. I would do my research. I would make sure I plugged in everything that I liked as a child and made it better with mm-hmm. now the complexities I have as an adult. I would plug into that story.
And your
that's
own
what
life
Kevin
experience
Smith did.
And everything, yeah.
That's what Kevin Smith did, and I hope Ta-Nehisi does the same thing with Black Panther, because it's time. You know, it's time to see what, you know, Jack Kirby and Stan Lee planted some seeds, man. I mean, some deep seeds that I don't even think they realized at the time.
No.
I mean, look at all their characters. That's why people gripe about the Fantastic Four, because perhaps one of the most important seeds they planted is the Fantastic Four, and it never blooms properly.
Right.
But Spider-Man, teen angst, pop, knocked it out of the park.
X-Men.
Okay, the X-Men, racism, the battle of evolution, pop, out the park. Even Thor,
mm-hmm.
which people think, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby just took Thor and they just rewrote a bunch of mythology. It's hard to take mythology, mm-hmm. turn it into a popular comic book, and take Thor and make him a superhero and interweave him through all these stories of mythology.
And still make him interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, but now you have the third wave of Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that you have characters like Ant-Man. You've got a character called Black Panther. You've got the Inhumans. And these are seeds.
And so, like, the Inhumans thing is interesting. Because if you look at what's happening in the comics now, right? The Terrigen Mist has rendered the mutant population sterile. Because Fox has the rights. you know, they're going to develop their whole new mutant race around the Inhumans until they get the rights back.
And I've seen that, and I think you that's silly, because I think the Inhumans were fine as they were, you know.
I mean, the X-Men kind of were always off in their own little universe anyway.
Well, the Inhumans were always, to me, more than mutants.
Yeah. They were cosmic.
They were cosmic. They had an extra... They were above the mutants. Mm-hmm. I mean, hell, this even leads into Captain Marvel.
What was it? DC Storm... The Stormwatch? Remember the Stormwatch?
Stormwatch was Wildstorm.
Right. Sorry.
But merged with...
Vertigo, right? Or... There was a DC New 52.
Yeah, they merged with... But... They were DC... They were Jim Lee's characters and came into the DC universe. Right.
So, but I was thinking, like, Inhumans were, like, a little higher than what Stormwatch is, but, like,
put them on the same. I mean, the Stormwatch was Authority.
Yeah.
Basically. Okay. Yeah, which was Jim Lee's version of the JLA. You know, but...
I'm shaking my head, yes.
Yeah.
In audio.
But I hope that a lot of people read Ta-Nehisi Coates's Between the World and Me, because this looks very interesting. And also pick up his Black Panther, because the sales will help him have some confidence to do things that all of us claim we've wanted to see.
Is this his first comic book?
I believe so.
So
I don't think he's done any other comic work, which, you know, doesn't mean anything. I mean, Kevin Smith hadn't really done any notable comic work except Jay and Silent Bob comics that he had done. And those were like indie productions themselves. So, I mean, you know, I'm willing to take a chance on shit like this. You know, I remarked to you earlier, you were like, well, hey, Brian, you finally got what you wanted. And, you know, it's the fact that there is a black male writing Black Panther is very compelling to me, and a black artist.
So a black creative team.
Black writer more so than because there's a lot of black artists out there grinding and creating images. Not necessarily of themselves or characters that look like them, which we still got a long way to go. Mm-hmm. But you've got a guy named Ta-Nehisi Coates, who's a very acclaimed writer, and he's been selected for a top tier Marvel character, and that hasn't happened before. So I like that, but you know, I'm still kind of pushing for the indie guy like myself, or Jacques. How do you pronounce his last name? Jacques, this is a plug for you.
Not So Super Comics, check it out.
Not So Super Comics. We just call you Jacques, but your last name is NYEMB, something like that. You'll have to get with us and show us how to pronounce that.
We're going to have him on at some point.
Right, he's going to be on the show.
That, so.
But yeah, if somebody like him was picked, that would be even more great. But I'll settle for Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
I'm
fun
excited.
To say. Ta-Nehisi.
Yeah. Ta-Nehisi. Ta-Nehisi, break it off, player. We want to see. We can't wait. We're very excited about this. So good luck. And we're going to read this Between the World and Me. Actually, next episode or two, after I complete reading the book, I'll also review. And Brian's going to read it too. Brian's are going to read Between the World and Me, because
the Brian's like to read.
Yeah, exactly.
So, hold on.
Though I still haven't read Ready Player One.
It's 152 pages.
Yeah, I should. So, I'm going to. It's late tonight.
You know, I'll just get the Kindle version.
Okay.
So, but then we can both finish it at the same time.
Right.
Yeah, it's after midnight. We're technically into Friday for recording. We chatted with Christian.
We really like you guys.
And we love you all.
I had McDonald's. I just threw... You know what? Jesus.
No, it's just loud in my ears. Anyway.
Do you guys know that we move around in the background, and every now and then you might hear a glass or some ice cubes or something? Because God forbid Brian take a sip of water. And this dude is pointing at like little readouts of noises and shit on the podcast. I'm sorry. Anyway. There it is.
All right. So I feel like this is pretty much all you need to hear from us this week. This was really the biggest news.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that got us excited.
I'm getting ready to go see Black Mass tomorrow with Johnny Depp. And there's another movie coming out.
The Martian.
Soon. The Martian's coming out. So. Yeah.
We might have to go see that one together. The Martian. And then do like a little quick review.
Okay.
To do that. Like we can go see that on like Friday or Saturday and then have that post on a Tuesday.
You know what I think we should do? I think we should do a double review. Because oddly enough, I feel like this strange kinship between Interstellar and The Martian. Because Matt Damon was in both.
Yeah, he was.
And he's playing a similar role. Because wasn't he...
Did you read The Martian?
I did not.
Okay, so I read The Martian. I saw Interstellar.
Mm-hmm.
Interstellar, he was the bright hope for all mankind, right? Yeah. Sent off to find a habitable world because the Earth had turned into a dust bowl.
Mm-hmm.
In The Martian, he is the botanist on this crew that's supposed to spend 31 days on the surface of Mars.
Mm-hmm.
They're there for like 3 or 4 days and this massive storm hits and he's thought to be dead and left behind.
Wasn't that similar to his position in Interstellar?
No, because he was sent out, like they sent 4 scientists out to like map these worlds.
But what was he doing? What was he doing when
he was lying about the planet that he found, saying it was habitable.
Right.
And then when Matthew McConaughey and...
Was he growing things and doing
No, he was, like, lying about it. Like, insane he was.
Well, that's but what then I'm
saying. Oh, yeah, sorry.
So that's what I mean. But,
my bad, I misunderstood. It's late.
Lord have mercy.
Super late.
Lord. This boy, you gotta lead him to water to make him drink. Anyway, all I was saying is...
Yeah.
Matt Damon... You guys see the correlation. Matt Damon's been in 2 high-profile sci-fi movies. Yes. And he had they bear some similarity towards each other. So we'll review them together.
Fair enough.
There we go. So, there we go.
Did you like Interstellar?
Loved it. I'm a big Matthew McConaughey fan. There were a couple cheesy spots in it, but I like the design of the robot. I thought that was cool.
The robot was so cool with it was in thirds or fourths and like the way it just kind of
tight. Yeah, the way it moved and I think Christopher Nolan, when he's on his shit, there's nobody that comes close to his ideas currently.
It was such a great departure from The Dark Knight, too.
Yeah.
Because it was so different.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Did you like Inception?
No.
Ooh, we'll have to talk about that.
I didn't. I thought I would like it, and I didn't.
All right.
I didn't understand it. and you know what? Interstellar was difficult to follow, but I understood that. I still, to this day, could not explain to you what the fuck was going on in Inception. So it kind of had a Matrix vibe.
I think it was like it was purposely vague, and like you're.
But didn't Christopher Nolan also do Memento?
Yes.
Never fucking understood Memento.
So I think it's on YouTube. I don't know where I found it, but like someone did like Memento like in order,
mm-hmm.
and it's not nearly as like fun to watch. You know, like in chronological order. Like someone put Pulp Fiction in chronological order. And it's like, this is not fun
at
all.
But Pulp Fiction is so good.
It is. But like,
I would not compare Memento to Pulp Fiction.
No. I'm saying like, because like Pulp Fiction, like you start in the middle, then you get the beginning.
No, I understand. Yeah.
So I'm saying the
whole organization of the movie. But I mean.
Well, and Memento is similar. It doesn't start at the beginning.
Right. But what I mean, though, about Pulp Fiction is this. Even though it's told out of order, the segments are so enjoyable. I wouldn't say such things about Memento.
Right.
It was okay, but they don't have memorable characters like Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction, you can watch it out of order and be like, ha, 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 these motherfuckers, they got brains and shit all over their clothes, so they got to wear these shorts. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. You don't know what's coming for you yet.
Right. But you can enjoy
so
that.
So my point was, like, someone did that to Memento, and it's just like, wow, this is so boring.
Yeah. But
I think you made a really excellent point there. Like, it's a movie about short-term memory and long-term memory loss, and none of the characters are memorable.
Except the one guy. Guy Pierce.
Yeah.
He was good. But, yeah, I don't remember too much. I remember a piece of toilet paper with a something written on it.
I just remember all the tattoos and like don't trust him or whatever. So,
right.
Like I think the best thing that came out of Memento was all the parodies, like you know that like people making fun of that.
You know what's weird? There was another movie I watched maybe during that same time, or maybe it wasn't. I just remember my ex and I watching it. And I was pretty fucking entertained by it. And I've never seen it rerun or repeated again anywhere. It was a movie called Identity.
Yeah.
You remember that?
It was that John Cusack?
I think he was in it.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool.
Was it about a serial killer or a killer? And at the end, they reveal his identity?
Yeah. Yeah, that was John Cusack.
That was a good one. That was pretty good. Pretty good. But anyway.
Speaking of cool movies. We digress. Like Antoine Fuqua's Southpaw.
Fuqua,
whatever. Sorry, Mr. Fuqua.
Names.
I watched Southpaw last night, and you gotta check it out.
With Jake Gyllenhaal.
And
he's a boxer.
Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
And 50 Cent.
50 was in there.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool.
Curtis.
You know what? Jake Gyllenhaal freaked me the fuck out in Nightcrawler.
Oh, we need to do a whole episode about that movie. Because that movie is fucked up.
Nightcrawler was the shit. And I didn't see it coming.
No.
It was just a casual night at home with the boys.
What he does to Bill Paxton in that movie.
My goodness.
And then his little worker, what he does.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
Yeah. The very first scene, what he does to the security guard.
Yeah. Just to get to fall into that world.
Yeah.
All right. So this will be it for me and Brian right now. Do you have anything else to add?
Yeah.
Or do you want to hop into the...
Real quick.
Yeah.
What books did you buy this week? I picked Lando. I got Lando issue 3.
Okay. Pick that up. 4. 5.
No.
No, 4.
4.
4 or 5. Yeah.
4. Okay, I need explanation.
Okay.
What are the Panthers doing?
At the end there?
Yeah, what are they doing?
I think one of them cuts the other one's arm off.
Okay, it's so like, why they turn on each other?
What's Star Wars and cutting people's arms
off? Did they turn on each other because the Sith shit is...
Yeah, it's like the dark side is like, hey, you know, go dark.
Okay, so
but they then they're teamed up.
I'm
really interested to see what happens.
I don't get that.
Because the next issue is the last issue of the Lando miniseries.
And it's good, but I'm starting to get tired of the witty banter between Lando
and the little guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the Ugnaught always has like 8 different names to call somebody. Yeah. You sweaty pug hustler, nuzzler. You know, I mean, it's like, okay, we get it. You got clever mouthpiece in space, but... Stop.
But, yeah, I got Grayson this week. I got the paybacks finally. I got Tokyo Ghost from last week.
Tokyo Ghost.
I'm trying to think of what else I got.
I picked up We Are Robin number 4 or 5. And they changed artists.
Okay.
And this artist
I haven't even opened the book yet.
This artist is pretty tight.
Cool.
Yeah, pretty tight on the inside. So. And I didn't read it, but I just paged through and looked at the art.
We've shared with them our preferred reading.
Yeah,
timeline
it's going to get read. I don't know when. But yeah, that's about the size of my books. I went on and bought just because I like to have a complete collection of Descender. I have the Descender floppy issues and the Descender graphic trade because I'm a geek. I'm a nerd. So I've got Descender and Drifter laying on top of each other on my bookshelf. And I just... As I lay down at night, I look over and I'm like, I own Descender and Drifter graphic novel.
And they're next to each other.
And
that makes me feel good.
That's why we do this show, because we love it.
Love it.
We love it. We love comics.
So, Christian Colbert.
Oh, awesome.
Awesome interview. It was a great conversation. Brian has known him for about a decade.
Yeah.
I've known him for about 4 days.
Yeah. Well, you've known about him vicariously.
I've known about him, but I've never met him, and he's very, very cool. So I hope you guys enjoy this interview.
You know what? And for people like Christian Colbert that we have on this show, obviously he's a creator. Out here in this industry, and creators need support
and celebration.
So, you know, if you can research his work online, buy his work. He does t-shirts for Hieroglyph, H-E-R-O-G-L-Y-P-H, t-shirt designs there. He's also my collaborator on Ravenhammer Comics. So you can buy our comics on Comixology, the Harlem Shadow issues. Lucius Hammer is accessible at ravenhammercomics.com. He's got Kid Cosmic, which we mentioned in the podcast.
Which sounds really cool, and I'm going to definitely track that one down.
Yeah.
I might Facebook him later and be like, hey, can you send me a...
He's got that. He's got Tom Corbett, which for you old schoolers out there, you know Tom Corbett, Space Cadet. And he also did Sinbad on Mars, which was part of the Ray Harryhausen.
Like Sinbad the Pirate.
Sinbad on Mars. They kind of did a crossover Sinbad, like John Carter kind of thing.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was interesting. He did some art for that.
Because I was really like looking forward to reading Sinbad, the comic with the puffy pants and the flat top on Mars.
Right. another cool thing I saw this week, and I mentioned this before, Marvel is unearthing an old miniseries that they were going to release by Jendy Tartovsky that he illustrated based on everybody's favorite hero for hire, Luke Cage.
Nice.
So I don't know when it's coming out, but They're bringing it out and it's happening. So, Luke Cage, Jendy Tartovsky fans, and you know who's not a Luke Cage or Jendy Tartovsky fan? Get ready because it's coming out, coming down the pike. But yeah, good show with Christian Colbert. Go out, buy his stuff, look at his stuff. We're gonna post some pages from our Lucius Hammer comic book. Where at?
It'll be just infamouspodcast.com. It'll be in the post show notes for this episode.
Okay.
All right, guys. So the next voices you'll hear is us talking to Brian.
Talking to who?
Or talking to Christian.
Jeez. It's time to shut this.
It is.
Shit
it's
down.
After midnight. We're ready to fall asleep. Anyway. So yeah, here is Christian Colbert.
Hey, Christian Colbert. Not Colbert, right?
Not Colbert. I got the bastardized American version.
So does he. That's just his character. Oh, I have some 312 in the fridge. I love that stuff.
Yeah, I'm not that big of a fan of it. I got a 12 of it yesterday, and obviously I'm going to drink it because I bought it. But
when's the last time you were in Cincinnati?
Oh, wow. Long time. Probably about 10 years, 8, 9, 10 years.
Really? You need to come visit us because there's a bunch of awesome
breweries. Wait a minute. He doesn't have any sense of time. He was here.
Hold on. The guy that doesn't have any sense of time.
You were here at least in 2009, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. We did that release party. I forgot about that. Yeah. Okay.
So, anyway, well, even since then, we have a bunch of awesome breweries here. So, you should come and we should do like the tour.
Okay, cool.
So, for anybody who's watching, we're on Periscope up here, although they can't see you. I should probably readjust the camera here in a second. Christian Colbert, not Colbert. You're an artist. This is the Infamous Podcast.
He's a creator.
Creator, sorry.
Damn it.
Right. I'm just better at drawing than I am at writing.
He's worked on things like Black Alpha. You're currently working for Warner Brothers and Disney right now, like kind of both, or just Disney?
Disney Publishing.
Sorry?
Disney Marvel. I did a
Disney Marvel.
Spider-Man kids books and a Guardians of the Galaxy coloring book.
Cool. Then you are also Brian's partner in crime with the the Ravenhammer stuff.
Yeah.
So, all right.
what's going on with this?
This is Periscope. All right, you can kind of see Christian. Can't really see us.
No. Are we like doing some experimental shit tonight? Yeah, where we're okay.
We're going full on multimedia. Hey, you guys can't hear us.
Okay, see tonight we get experimental. I look like a jackass with my work uniform on.
I'm wearing gym shorts and an Infamous Podcast T-shirt. I'm the guy who wears his own T-shirt to his own podcast. If you guys can't hear us, if you can't hear us on Periscope, leave me a message and I'll move you guys around again. All right. So,
and look, there's my t-shirt. Couch.
No, we're gonna give this one away.
That looks like a sheet. So. Are you trying to say I guess I am kind of big.
Yeah, that's it's an XL.
Okay.
So anyhow. Anyway, hey, so Christian, how you doing?
I'm not too bad. Not too bad at all.
So you and I have been chatting on and off all week, trying to figure out technology to varying degrees of success. So we finally got it working tonight. I know you and Brian have been corresponding a lot lately about coming on the show. So we're really happy to have you.
Sweet. Happy to be here.
Christian, thanks for coming, bro.
You're very welcome, Brian. All right.
So,
fucking A.
All right.
Fucking A. My voice again.
So you did send me a message earlier, which made me really laugh that you're going to work really hard to get the explicit tag on the podcast, which so far out of 10 published, this will be number 11, technically episode 10, but the 11th show we've published, there have been two that haven't had the explicit tag. So
how do we manage that?
Well, yeah. One was me and Johnny, one was me and the kid bot.
Okay,
so there you go. You know, okay. Although I was waiting for her to like drop something, like, so I'd be like, "Oh, kid, what are you doing?"
You know, if I'm involved, that shit's over with within the first 5 seconds. You know.
So anyway, say hi to Periscope, bro.
Periscope, what's up? I'm not totally comfortable with your technology yet, but hi.
All right. So Christian, like, I guess one of the big reasons we wanted to have you on was to talk indie comics. One,
right.
Two, anything that you wanted to promote and get out there so we can share it with our growing audience again. No thanks to Brian. kidding. And then I guess, like, really, I want to hear some of the battle stories that you and Brian have about collaborating and working on, you know, the Lucius Hammer book and, you know, just...
He doesn't like Harlem Shadow.
And I'm interested in learning more about Raven's Hollow.
Okay.
So.
Did you hear what I said?
You don't like Harlem Shadow? Well,
no.
It's not for everybody, maybe not. I don't know.
I don't not like Harlem Shadow. I just prefer the Lucius Hammer book.
Sweet. That's the one I drew.
Anyway. And I told you what I needed to see out of Harlem Shadow to like really get into.
Listen, do you push my buttons? Do you?
No. Never.
You do?
Never.
So can I push your buttons?
No. Sure. There's no buttons to be pushed.
All right.
I'm kidding.
Well, go ahead.
Anyway.
Well, I mean, you're the one. You're the outsider. Why don't you ask him questions? I want to let him take the lead. So
let him or me?
I want to let Christian answer the questions, and then I'll jump in. You know, but you ask, what do you have any questions about? Let's start off with this.
Yeah.
What do you want to know about him?
Yeah. So how'd you get into the business? Or no, actually, let's go back a little bit further. How'd you get started as an artist?
Pretty much just like any kid, you know, your parents get you a box of crayons and some paper and you just start drawing. And I just kind of never stopped.
Yeah.
I just kept going and going and going. And I discovered comic books when I was probably about 10 years old on a spinner rack in a drugstore, like a lot of people did. And yeah. It just kind of took off from there.
Have you ever thought about being voice talent?
I've considered it. I have this like really scary, deep demon voice that I do that scares the shit out of my girlfriend.
Who's the scariest voice you've ever heard over the telephone?
That would be Kevin Grievous.
Can you do it?
I can't go as far as him, but that guy, it's almost inaudible sometimes.
Do you know who we're talking
about?
Yeah,
he was the werewolf, the big scary werewolf at the beginning of Underworld.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic guy.
Did he co-write Underworld?
Yes.
Yeah.
He created Underworld.
Okay.
And gave the co-writing, isn't this right? He created it, but he didn't have any clout at the time, so he had to kind of give somebody else credit for co-writing.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how it went down. Like, I think he wrote the original screenplay, and then the studio, you know, takes it and runs with it, does whatever they do.
Exactly, exactly. But anyway, getting back to you. So, you know, I know he's a big X-Men fan, too. So,
all right.
I'm sure that's a big part of his upbringing.
It was actually one of the first comics I ever bought was a classic X-Men. Had a, I think it was a John Byrne cover.
There you go.
More John Byrne on this podcast.
John Byrne.
We talk about John Byrne a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big John Byrne fan. you know.
Yeah, his X-Men stuff was amazing.
Not necessarily his politics.
Wow.
No, not his politics. I mean, I try to ignore a lot of that stuff from creators. It can make you dislike them sometimes, kind of how Frank Miller went a little insane a little while ago.
Yeah.
A little while. What, like, was that, what, like RoboCop 2 that he lost his mind?
Oh, that was terrible.
Yeah, that was terrible. I'm talking about when there was the whole Occupy Wall Street movement and he published some
Holy Terror.
Yeah.
I didn't even read Holy Terror. I bet it looks cool, but I don't know the whole message behind it.
Do you know that he's not drawing the Master Race?
Yes, I did know that. Some of the promo art I've seen looks really cool.
But it's Kubert.
I trust Kubert. He's good.
Yeah. I just rather see Frank Miller, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I would rather not have them rehash old ideas. Yeah. I don't think Dark Knight needs another sequel. I didn't think it needed a sequel in the first place.
It didn't need a sequel in the first place.
I'll agree with that. yet I'll still pick up the Dark Knight 3. So.
Yeah, I probably will too.
But
hey, whatever happened to Kid Cosmic?
It got published by Arcana Studio. Still out there. You can still go to arcanastudio.com and pick it up if you want.
They released it?
Yeah, it's released. I don't know
What is Kid Cosmic for those of us who don't know what that is?
Kid Cosmic is a book I worked on with a guy named Scott Kinney. He's a writer. And I did the first two issues of the book almost 11 years ago now. And then 8 years later, they found a publisher and I finished the last two issues. So there's a huge, like, 8, 9, 10 year gap in between the two issues. But it's about a little kid who gets an alien super suit, defends the planet. So all ages book, fun read. I mean, it's no rocket science by any means, but it's still a good fun read. Good for kids.
It's kind of like Nova meets Mega Man.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. You also had another, what was the other book that you worked on? Was it Tom Corbett?
Yeah, that was a...
Blue Water?
Yeah. Yeah, Blue Water Productions. I did like a 5-6 page intro that was supposed to go into a Free Comic Book Day Blue Water Productions book, but that just never happened. I think it got published. You can find it on Comixology, actually. Just search Blue Water or Tom Corbett.
It's pretty strong, though. Nice, nice artwork.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, just kind of speaking of the artwork, I'm a big fan of your just style in general. You know, like in the Lucius Hammer book, I was obviously, like, on your Twitter account today, and I saw the sketch you were working on, which we talked about a little bit earlier today. And I can totally see where that Superman's going, and when it's done, I hope you post a picture of it so I can just download it and have it in my.
Oh shit! He drew a picture of Superman.
Yeah, it was.
Thank God.
Holding the American flag.
Thank God.
I like Superman.
Well, I know you do, but I saw the one of Batman earlier, and I'm like, of course that's cool, but I'm like, damn, somebody represent for Superman for a little bit. You know what I'm saying? So I missed. Because one of our characters who's obviously meant to be kind of like Superman is the American Way.
Right.
And he just does killer portrayals of him. Like, mm-hmm. The first time I ever saw American Way, I was like, yeah, we're probably going to have to do a book based on this character alone because he's just visually strong.
Yeah.
I don't even know that I've seen you draw Superman before.
Probably done it a couple of times. I might have one or two on my DeviantArt account, but
yeah. he does a good Thor too. I like his Thor. Yeah.
Well, we were talking earlier too. I didn't realize he did work on Black Alpha. How do you say his name? Tom Rausch? Rausch? Rush?
Rash?
Rash?
Rash. Like you have an itchy red spot.
Tom Rash. Anyway, which I actually really like that book.
We're gonna get him on here too.
Okay.
Oh yeah, he'd be down with this in a heartbeat. Yeah.
So but yeah, and so like it's exciting, like looking at this cover, it's like, oh yeah, that's definitely Christian style, which is cool.
Now, what was cool is this cat was in USA Today and Entertainment Weekly, was it within weeks of each other? Remember when the Harlem Shadow stuff dropped and Black Alpha was in USA Today?
Yeah, I thought I was about to be famous and I was going to have paparazzi and shit like that.
Hey, me too. You see, I'm in a work uniform right now. So, you know, I don't know what happened to that. Yeah, I do. I know what happened to that. Soft bash.
I know what happened to that too. We know what happened to that.
Guys, we'll let you know about soft bash in a little bit. We're going to get some more important things said, and then we'll tell you about soft bash. Go ahead.
I want to know about soft batch now. Anyway,
you'll find out.
So, like, what are some of the other things that you've worked on that people would know?
Well, I've done a ton of logo work. I've done covers and stuff. I've done a lot of stuff for Kevin Grievous. Did a bunch of covers, sign logos, coloring. For a long time there, I was basically just picking up anything somebody would pay me for. If it was comic book related, I'd do lettering. Even like pre-press stuff like that. And then there's Lucius Hammer, there's Harlem Shadow. Again, Raven's Hollow, that's still kind of lingering on my hard drive there. But the most recent stuff is the Disney stuff, the Spider-Man, Guardians of the Galaxy stuff.
Now, is that the Guardians of the Galaxy in the style of that new cartoon that's out?
Launched
that style. Or that, I guess it's, I don't know if it's premiered yet. I know the first episode is on Disney XD and it's free on iTunes right now. So,
they sent me a big, giant PDF style guide that I had to follow very closely. It was a lot of fun to draw. It's a fun job, but it's still a job. So there's a lot of back and forth with editors, stuff like that. I mean, you kind of expect that with a big company like this.
Oh yeah. So I mean, as someone who's done like a good amount of indie work, like how do you adjust your process when you're given that big like brand Bible of, you know, this is the exact color that we use, this is the typeface that we use, like that kind of stuff. Does that really affect you one way or the other, or is it more, you know, this just makes my job easier because I know exactly what they want?
Well, it's a little bit harder because you have to draw it exactly like they want it to. You don't have a lot of room to draw. I didn't have a lot of room to draw my version of Spider-Man or my version of Rocket Raccoon. You have to, you know, make it look like it looks like in the show, which is, it's not a bad thing by any means, but you don't get to flex, you know, your creativity as much. But you get paid a lot better. There's that too.
Who designed those original character designs for the cartoon?
I'm not sure. Probably Disney in-house somewhere.
Yeah.
In their animation studio.
So, I mean, do you still have a chance to put your own little bit of flair on someone else's character design, or do you literally have to stick to like by the numbers, you know, this is what Peter Quill is like, this is what Rocket, this is our Groot.
You have a little bit of room, not too much. You have a little bit of room to mess with it. The biggest creative freedom they give you is the storytelling, like setting up camera angles, shots, stuff like that. But as far as like keeping it looking like the way they want it to look, they're pretty specific on that.
Cool. And you said, did you say you were doing some coloring books too, like working on that, or just the kids books?
Yeah, that's what the Guardians of the Galaxy was. It's called a CNA pool. I forget what the CNA stands for, but it's a whole bunch of black and white. I did 100 black and white illustrations, just basic stuff like Rocket fighting, you know, some aliens, or Groot standing on top of a spaceship. It was really, really basic storytelling stuff. So you just try to make it look as cool as you possibly can,
mm-hmm.
without, you know, making it look too hokey at the same time. I mean, it's coloring book, so it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be the most masterful piece of art you've ever seen, but you still got to make it look cool and get it done on time. And
yeah. So when you're designing for that, I mean, do you draw it out like all the way like to where you color it and everything, or do you just like stop at inks?
The beginning of the process is you sketch the whole book out, like thumbnails. I draw it really small, just to save time, and you send those to the editor, and they send them to Marvel. The Marvel gets back to the editor. Editor gets back to you. So it's like that pretty much for every step of the way.
One question. I'm going to cut you off.
This is interesting to me.
I mean,
you've been in the comic book industry for a while. You know all about
I'm just saying. If you ask one more boring question, all right.
Why don't you ask some
questions? I want to get to the fun shit with him, which is. And he's, you gotta understand, this is like him and I have developed a relationship. He's kind of like my brother. So when he won't brag on himself or when he won't say shit, I'm probably going to say shit and bring stuff up. Like he was doing a pretty ingenious little book a while ago. He stopped working on it. Remember you were working on Townies and it was kind of like a independent little strip that was based on you and your friends a little bit.
Yeah, it was kind of a
family.
Yeah, it's kind of a semi-autobiographical book with a whole bunch of dumb shit and drug references and sex. And definitely not an all ages book. I'm still going to revisit that someday. I think I just need more stuff to happen in my life to finish the story.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Life experience, bruh. Well, yeah. Since I've known you, you've gotten a lot of life experience. So maybe
packed a lot into 10 years, I guess.
Exactly. Okay. So I'll just set the stage for the story. All right. So I'm looking for an artist to help me draw a werewolf comic book that I started writing called Primal. So I go out to this place called Digital Webbing.
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, out of like 50 fucking artists that, you know, come through on Digital Webbing trying to make a buck, I find Christian.
Okay.
And he had a piece of artwork that just blew me away. It was Caleb. I think it was Caleb. And he was standing there. Caleb is a little dark haired white kid with a hoodie. And there's this huge purple dude with dreadlocks standing behind him. Looked like dreadlocks. They weren't necessarily dreadlocks, but they looked like them to me.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, that's a really cool character. And he had like what I thought was purple and white war paint on him.
Okay.
That attracted me. I called Christian. I said, what the fuck is this drawing about? I got to know. So he starts kicking this story to me. It's called Raven's Hollow. One thing leads to another. I share with him that I have this kind of parody of Luke Cage that I'm doing called Lucius Hammer.
Right.
Because, you know, nobody knows this, but Lucius Hammer started out as just a straight parody of Luke Cage. I was wanting to write like something funny to maybe go on Cartoon Network or something.
Sure.
That they would pick up. Just like Black Dynamite is a parody of blaxploitation movies. Mm-hmm. I wanted Lucius Hammer to be a parody of blaxploitation comic books. So this guy draws him one night and I'm just like, wow, the picture that he drew took me in another direction.
Okay.
You know, I was like, yeah, I really don't want to do a comedy. I want to do something that'll mean something that becomes mm-hmm. iconic. And so that led us down the road to do Lucius Hammer and eventually the Harlem Shadow. Because the Harlem Shadow wasn't even planned. It was kind of like a improvisational, I won't call it a mistake, but people were asking about it, so we just kind of did it on the fly.
Cool.
Yeah. So, but we got involved with we had a very naive idea of how the industry works. We thought all we had to do was make the cake and then present it, and then everybody would take a bite of the cake and we would be celebrities. And as you can see, that didn't happen.
You're still working on that part, right?
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
But why don't you, I think what's interesting about the whole Lucius Hammer thing, Christian, and I want to kind of get that on this show, is I know I gave you a very specific description of what I wanted Lucius Hammer to look like. And I told you what the story was, but how did you come up with that first initial image that you produced of Lucius Hammer?
Are you talking about the one that's like an older Lucius and he's got like gray in his sideburns?
Yes.
With the red background.
One of my favorites.
Well, I was kind of kicking around ideas in my head of what he would look like. And I don't know if it was during football season, but I saw Jim Brown on TV. I was like, that's Lucius Hammer right there. Like an old Lucius Hammer. So I kind of sketched that out first.
Right.
And then the way he appears in the comic book, I kind of reverse engineered it from there, like aged him down a bit. You can even see in his costume design, it's actually a Brown's costume. It's orange with two brown stripes and a white stripe down the middle. Much to Brian's dismay, because he's a Bengals fan. But
that's okay. I still dig it. I liked it from the minute I saw it. Yeah.
I wanted to give it like an old school superhero flair to it. It wasn't like, didn't have all kinds of pads and armor. He just had spandex and some big boots and a belt. But yeah, that's basically how I came up with it.
Right, right. So the Harlem Shadow. You know that everybody loves your covers. In fact, that was a huge selling point of those books.
Whereas covers. Yeah.
I mean, almost everybody you talk to loves Rodolfo Buscaglia.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at him right here on your DeviantArt page.
Interior art, but his covers kind of got like a Batman animated series kind of flair to him. Now, you know, I never even talked to you about that when you did these. I mean, did that play a role? Were those influential? Batman animated series?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, what did that premiere in, what, 1990, I think? And I mean, I watched every episode as it came on. I bought the DVDs when they came out, and especially when they revamped the style, when they gave Batman the all black cowl. They streamlined everything, and it just kind of changed the way I looked at things, and maybe gave me like a simpler way of looking at designing a page or a cover.
Right.
And, cool. I think it worked really well for what I was trying to do on the covers.
Do you think? I mean, and this is a controversial question, but you know, I'm a line stepper. I don't give a fuck. I'm a step on the line. Do you think we had anything to do with a lot of the diversity you're starting to see? Do you think our books and other books that came out maybe 4 or 5 years ago that pushed the diversity agenda, do you think that had anything to do with what you see now at the bigger companies?
I would hope so. I would hope they would listen to the people that read their books and, you know, at least take into consideration what they want.
Right.
Because it's true. I mean, 20 years ago, all you had was a whole bunch of white dudes making a whole bunch of comics for other white dudes. And there was nothing for the average black guy who couldn't pick up a book and find something where you could relate to it. So that was one of the big selling points for me, is to put out a book that everybody can enjoy. And that's what I continue to try to do, is make something that everybody likes. So like a random Latino kid can pick up my comic and find something he can relate to in it. Not that I, know exactly what a Latino kid goes through, because I'm a big goofy white guy, but I just, like I said, I just want to try to make books that everybody can enjoy.
But to that point though, I mean, how do white guys write books about black guys? How do black guys write books about white guys? I mean,
I guess it just takes being a skilled writer. I mean, I take my experiences, because I know a lot of black people, hang around with a lot of black people, and I mean, you just take it all into your memory banks and you use it. I mean, you base it off of real people.
Did you see this? Did you see this comment I made on a post you made the other day? You found this drawing from back in the day. It was this dude with like these Tims on and these jeans.
Oh yeah.
And I said hashtag bum stiggity bum stiggity bum.
Yep.
What were you seriously trying to draw DOS effects, or was
I was just. I was a freshman in college, and I was smoking a lot of weed and listening to a lot of DOS effects. So that's basically how that drawing came about.
That was cool, though. That was cool to see that. You remember that Wu-Tang comic book when all the Wu-Tang guys were like karate masters and they were like fighting lions and shit? And
I do remember that.
Remember that?
I think I bought every issue of that. I liked it when I came out. Now looking back on it, of course, it hasn't aged as well, but it was a really cool concept. There weren't a lot of people doing something.
Exactly. Well, you can go ahead and ask a couple questions. Just don't ask no boring shit.
What type of paper do you use? And when you're drawing, what grade of line do you put on? I'm just kidding.
That's your white guy voice again.
That's my white guy voice.
I think your normal voice is white guy enough.
See, he says my. You know what Christian said to me and hurt my feelings and pissed me off.
Now what?
When he met me, he was like, "Oh, dude, I thought you were gonna be like short and light skinned because of your voice."
That's funny.
Oh fuck.
Very, very funny.
And then we drank like 10 pitchers of beer down in Clifton. Was that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was in Clifton. Yeah.
Yeah, it was in Clifton. It was across the street from that movie theater, that indie movie theater.
Oh, the Esquire.
Esquire, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a bar called Arliss.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw Hoop Dreams there.
I saw lots of stuff there.
Oh,
good theater.
Good movie you should check out. 12 O'Clock Boys. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I never found, like, I found some of the stuff on YouTube, but I can't find the documentary.
Oh, okay. You tell me I'll find that. It for you. Yeah. You got to watch it, CC. It's about these kids in Baltimore that ride around on dirt bikes all day, and they call themselves 12 O'Clock Boys because all they do is keep the bike in a constant wheelie the entire time as they go down the street. It's berserk. It's Mad Max. Now, I'm serious.
It's just missing the desert and like Fury gasoline Road rations
in Baltimore.
So,
yeah,
Baltimore.
Yeah.
Did you say you just watched The Wire?
I just recently watched the first season of The Wire.
Okay. Have you seen The Wire, Christian?
I've seen a couple episodes here and there. I think I didn't get into it right away because McNulty really annoys the shit out of me for some reason.
Me too.
It's fair enough. He gets worse like as the series goes on.
But he's good. He's good.
Well, Dominic West or Weiss, however you say it.
Yeah.
Like he's a pretty decent actor, and like you're not supposed to like McNulty. But like you sit there and you watch and like how
McNulty was a cat that was from 300, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like how does this guy get away with anything? And how has like his fellow officers not like shot him in the line of duty, accidentally on purpose? But yeah. So I mean, he talked a little bit about Batman the Animated Series. What are some of your other influences?
Comic book wise, like I said, early John Byrne stuff really got me going when I was young. I think then in high school I discovered Ed McGuinness. He did like a Deadpool one shot, and I just fell in love with his style when I was like 16, 17. And then of course Joe Madureira on X-Men. Frank Miller stuff. Yeah. I got to college, I started reading it. Frank Miller ever did. Of course 80s cartoons, Transformers, Thundercats, G.I. Joe.
Silverhawks.
Silverhawks.
What's wrong with Silverhawks?
Tiger Sharks.
Wait. What's wrong with Silverhawks?
No, I said.
Okay.
Silver. Hey, what about Brave Star?
Brave Star, man. When I was living in Akron a few years ago, I didn't have cable. They played Brave Star late at night, probably about 2:33 in the morning. They played two episodes back to back, and it was dope.
What?
Wow.
What programmer or what person that came up with that schedule chose Brave? Was Brave Star to air at that time of night?
I don't know, but I thank them.
Yeah. That was inspired scheduling.
It was.
There was another cartoon, though, too. Brave Star. You remember the Rambo cartoon?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was off yesterday. And in between little chores and things I was doing, I watched First Blood Part 2 and the beginning of Rambo 3. And I know Rambo 3 sucked, but the beginning where he has that stick fight.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was dope. Actually.
Yeah.
What was the like the most recent one? Was it just called Rambo? Like it was called like Rambo.
It was just called Rambo.
Just Rambo.
Yeah, it's just called Rambo. It's easily the most violent film I've ever seen.
I did.
Yeah.
You said you saw it, Christian?
Yeah, I saw it. It's easily the most violent film I've ever seen in my life. You got people getting blown in half, and it was a Rambo film. It's worth watching if you're a Rambo fan.
I thought I heard like he was like shooting like big 50 cal like machine gun or something, just like blowing body parts off of people.
Yeah, that's basically how it went down.
Yeah, I don't know.
I love, I you know what? I don't know why I love the first two so much, but you know, the second Rambo, I love when he he just, he might as well just be a god at the point in which he gets all the POWs in the helicopter,
yeah,
destroys the Russian helicopter, flies back to the base, the military base. But my favorite scene is when that guy that betrays him and like leaves him there with the tie on, he's sitting in this office waiting for Rambo to come in, and Rambo like comes in and unloads like a full clip of bullets. I mean, to me, there was a time when Stallone and Schwarzenegger could do no wrong. Right. And it was that time, like Predator, Rambo 2,
Commando,
Raw Deal,
Cobra.
Yeah. I mean, just ridiculous. But don't you miss the 80s a little bit? Or were you too young to really enjoy all that?
My parents let me watch some questionable movies when I was too young. So I got to see a lot of that stuff, and I do miss it. Looking back of it, a lot of it doesn't hold up as well, but it's still got that nostalgia to me. Like,
yeah,
you kind of overlook the downfalls in the storyline just because it's kind of awesome. It doesn't always have to be the best story.
I'm gonna say three. Awesome. I'm gonna say three movie names to you from the 80s that nail the 80s for me.
All right.
Four.
What was that?
I'm going to say four movie names.
Okay.
In chronological order. Escape from New York.
Kurt Russell.
And he's in another one, too. Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, of course. There's also Tango and Cash, if you want to bring that one up.
I like that, but I'm going to name two more.
Okay.
Lost Boys and Vamp.
I got a Lost Boys poster hanging right here on my wall. Kiefer Sutherland.
Yes. Pivotal.
There you go. No, there's also the two Coreys in there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Bill S. Preston Esquire.
Wait a minute.
Alex Winter.
Did I just hear Professor Dog?
I think you did. He was probably barking at something insignificant like he always does.
his dog is named.
He showed me his Professor dog the other dog. Day.
Yes.
Oh, his name's Professor Dog? He didn't tell me that.
Yeah.
Is that like, yeah, Professor X? Like,
that'll be a comic book soon.
No, actually, that's the, when we went to the shelter, that was the name he had, and we were thinking of changing it, but it was just too awesome to give up.
Maybe. Yeah, that's a cool name.
That's a hard one to top. I mean, like,
yeah.
I don't know. I always thought my daughter, if she got like an animal, she'd like her fish is named Mrs. Fish. And it's like, I mean, she got it when she was three. So, you know, that's great. And so when she got a hamster, we joked that she was going to name it Mrs. Hamster, you know, and it just kind of teased her about that. And then she gave it a real name. And it's like, well, this isn't any fun.
Mrs. Fish is pretty good, though.
Yeah. It was Mrs. Fish and Mr. Fish. Mrs. Fish ate Mr. Fish.
Mrs. Fish and Mr. Fish sound like those people on SpongeBob. You know, those,
yeah,
those nondescript characters that sit in the background and crack jokes in the restaurant. So look, just to give this episode just a little bit more seriousness to it, I thought it would be cool if you and I kind of chimed in about some of the dangers that lurk out there for indie creators that we ran into. Because if you and I had listened to maybe a podcast like this, maybe we wouldn't have been so foolhardy in some of the shit that we did. I think the best way to start that out is to say that Christian and I are both very conscientious creators, mm-hmm, me being a writer, him being an artist, and us being able to kind of switch those roles sometimes too. Him being able to do it more so than me, because I can draw a little bit. I can draw beyond stick figures, but I mean, he writes and draws. But bottom line, we came together under a creative enterprise to make some quality books. And I think it was more of a creative thing than really a money thing. I mean, we just want to do it because we love comics.
Right.
And we wanted to create something. And we went out and formed an LLC, got computers. You know, we kind of acted like we were doing the business thing. We even had some people involved that meant well, but they weren't comic book people.
Right.
So when we were meeting with them and talking with them, you know, they really didn't understand what we were doing. They were just kind of like, hey, Christian's talented, Brian's talented, we like them both. Here's some money, go do what you do. And, you know, we tried to do that. There were some decisions that were made on my part that weren't the most savvy things to do. Like I commissioned the design of an action figure, which we could have used. Ooh. Yeah.
I still have the 3D renderings of those in my email.
Yeah. We could have gone without that, but you know, I'm still convinced at some point that's going to come in handy, because the guy that sculpted our action figure for Lucius Hammer,
right,
was the original sculptor that did the original Star Wars action figures. You should know him. He lives in Pleasant Ridge. His name is Robert Kling.
Oh, I met him once, like a long time ago. So just some background there. Kenner used to be in Cincinnati, if you listeners don't know that. And so there's actually a ton of just like prototype Star Wars toys that float around this city. And if you're lucky enough to see one or get your hands on one, it's really a whole bunch of one of the kind Star Wars memorabilia, which is, you know, as Brian likes to make fun of my Star Wars fandom or fanhood, it's really fun to like go out and accidentally come across these things.
Well, Lucius Hammer has some kinship to the Star Wars action figure line, because the guy who sculpted them sculpted Lucius Hammer. But we could have used that money. It was about $800-$900 we used to commission this guy to do the sculptures, and money we could have used for other things.
Yeah.
So you bump your head on shit like that. But what we really did was, when the money got tight and we wanted to we needed some more funding, we turned to the first person that we thought would, that believed in our project. And he was a thirsty little promoter that lived around here in Cincinnati and put together some bogus forms. And,
oh yeah.
You know, we're not going to say his name. We'll just call him Softbatch.
Oh, okay. Softbatch.
Or Pigfoot, whichever you prefer.
Softbatch. Did you say Pigfoot?
Pigfoot.
Pigfoot, yeah.
Kool-Aid. He kind of reminds you of the Kool-Aid Man. Remember the Kool-Aid Man used to run through the walls?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He looks like if Rick Ross and the Kool-Aid Man fucked and had a baby. That's what this guy looked like.
Now, is he bright red? Or is he like maybe like an orange-flavored Kool-Aid?
Now, you ask yourself, why would we fall for something like this? Because we were thirsty. We wanted some things to happen. And I don't know. We just were green at that time. What's weird is later on, we run into probably the biggest person that we could run into in Russell Simmons. And we went through a similar kind of struggle with his business enterprise when the Harlem Shadow was optioned. So
I remember that really well, because like you actually called me and said, hey, this is happening. How do I capitalize this? And I remember you and I met a couple times to talk about that. And, you know, it was a lot of, well, it's coming. And like, cause the people you were dealing with were telling you it's coming. And then, I remember like, I hadn't talked to you in probably like 3 or 4 months, and I randomly ran into you and I was like, hey, what's going on with that? And you're like, hands in the air. I don't know.
Well,
like you were really frustrated. Did you go through the same kind of frustration that Brian went through with that, Christian?
Absolutely. I mean, we worked with our lawyer back and forth with the producers and all kinds of other people with their hands in the cookie jar. And yeah, it was incredibly frustrating. I was kind of hoping that since it was Russell Simmons and Def Jam, that it would run a little smoother and things would happen a little bit faster. But it was just a guy with more money who was trying to get something from us for free.
That was 3 years ago? 2 years ago?
That was 2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah.
Did it ever come off to you like the biggest? Because see, Christian and I are big hip hop fans, mm-hmm. so to have Russell Simmons be interested.
Oh yeah.
But wait a minute. Not only to have Russell Simmons be interested and have us be hip hop fans, but then to tease us even further and say that Common
was going to do the voice.
Was going to do the voice of our character. I mean, needless to say, Christian and I both shot off several times, you know, upon the announcement of this. And it was like, fuck, man, we did 2 issues. We're the shit. And then we were in Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen just with any project. And it was just a huge tease, but I'm still proud of it. It's an accomplishment, you know. Mm-hmm. We put together 4 issues of 2 separate characters and wound up creating, you know, a big noise that was a noise for a minute, which is more than a lot of people can say.
Yeah.
Still didn't amount to shit, but, you know.
Almost famous. Almost there.
So like coming out of that, did you guys not want to keep working together? Like why aren't we seeing more Lucius Hammer, Raven Hammer type titles coming from, you know, the Raven Hammer Brain Trust?
I'll go first.
There's a lot of reasons. Some of the reasons me and Brian agreed not to talk about on air. But one of the big reasons is money. Brian has kids. You got to have a day job. You got to pay the bills. When you come home from work, you don't always feel like putting another 8 hours in, sometimes even more. That was one of the big issues. We kind of thought when Russell Simmons got involved that we'd start seeing some type of monetary, you know, compensation at least a little bit down the road, but that didn't even happen. They kind of stiffed us on what they promised. They promised us $2,000 for the rights. And since they didn't develop it within a certain period of time, it was in the contract that they didn't have to pay us the $2,000. So that's how kind of they can pull the wool over your eyes like that.
All right. That's part one of our exciting interview with artist Christian Colbert. Make sure to tune in on Tuesday because Christian and Brian get into some great discussions about what it was like to have their character optioned and some of the just trials and tribulations indie creators go through when working with some of these big media companies. Don't miss it. It's a great conversation and we think you guys are going to love it. All right, we're back. So I hope you guys enjoyed that interview. Christian is a very cool guy, as you can plainly hear. Part two of that interview will post on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So definitely look for that bonus episode.
See, that's how we roll, Infamous Podcast Nation. We just like bring you the best in talent and we sit down and we just talk to a person like, you know, it's just some regular shit going on. It's just people just kicking ideas back. Well, that's what we do on the show. We kick ideas. All right. So if you want to come on here, you want to come on a podcast and kick ideas and get creative, you come see Tudor, you come see Williams. And that's what we do.
Yeah, or if you have someone else that you want to recommend, like we want to have everybody
kick ideas.
Awesome. All right, Brian, where can they find you online?
Wait a minute, I gotta say one more
time. Oh, sorry. Kick ideas.
Kick ideas on this show.
Maybe that's how it gets. Maybe that's what we should call the show. Kick ideas.
Where to reach me. www.ravenhammercomics.com. Become fans on the Lucius Hammer Facebook page by searching Lucius Hammer. Most people can't spell Lucius. I'll spell it for you. Lucius. Also, search Harlem Shadow on Facebook and fan me there too. That'll help me out quite a bit. Other than that, keep reading funny books.
Awesome. I'm Brian Tudor. At Brian Tudor on pretty much every social network. Check it out. And we are the Infamous Podcast at infamouspodcast.com.
Certified Infamous.
Certified Infamous is our favorite hashtag. And you can find us on Twitter at Infamous Podcast. Definitely check it out. Check out our Facebook page.
Keep it infamous.
Keep it infamous. All right, guys. And lastly, don't forget, your 5-star reviews are totally welcome and encouraged. And yeah. All right, Brian. All right. Later, guys.